This is the July 13 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Naomi Bloom of TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. And a bit later in the program, we'll talk with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Matt Bennett, let's begin with you today. We'll get a list of items from you and Naomi Bloom to talk about.
Yeah, I just think, obviously, recap a little bit as far as the report was concerned. Just thoughts and ideas on some of the numbers that they came up with, not only on production but demand, and then looking forward, you know, what the thoughts are amongst the others on what we're looking at for production. We know that the weather turned better over the last couple of weeks, but you know, some of these forecasts as of Thursday certainly changed the tune just a little bit. So just want to kind of talk a little bit about it, and you know, what's going on in Naomi's backyard as well as mine, because I know we need to be able to see each other's point of view as well, instead of getting backyarditis, because I've been doing that my whole career.
Well, let's hear from Naomi Bloom, and then we'll see about that backyarditis very quickly. Naomi, what's on your list of discussion points for the day?
Yeah, agreeing with Matt as far as recapping of the USDA report, I think there's still some questions surrounding what that potential corn yield is or isn't. Also, the value of the dollar dropping below 100 for the first time in nearly a year and a half was significant today to markets. And keeping an eye on everything with the Black Sea grain deal that is either happening or not happening. And, of course, trade is assuming it's going to get done, but you just never know. So a lot of little moving parts to be keeping an eye on this week.
Well, let's start with USDA's report that was released on Wednesday of this week. Of course, they rolled in the acreage numbers, grain stocks figures for that matter as well, but the acreage figures, and then managed to drop in this round. And this is World Agricultural Outlook Board, not USDA NAS. That won't happen until next month. The average corn yield by 4 bushels to the acre from 181.5 to 177.5. What'd you make of that drop? Was it in line where you thought it might be, Matt?
Yeah, you know, our official guess was 176.5, and let's face it, it's a guess. I mean, in July, you don't even know if they're going to go there. After 2012, having the drop in July, you know, they really haven't done that since then, changed the methodology around a little bit in 2013. So a lot of folks were actually thinking they must not have been the ones making official guess and estimates, but a lot of folks were thinking, well, who knows, maybe they'll stay at a 181.5. And I've got to admit that 2 weeks ago, I felt very confident, you know, that we'd be looking at something like we got yesterday. And again, we were a bushel below that. But I guess coming into the report, you know, the weather had changed a fair amount. I know not everyone's getting rain, but obviously some really important areas were able to get a fair amount of rain to kind of stabilize this crop, particularly, you know, through the I state. So I didn't know exactly how they'd come in there, but it was interesting to see them drop corn, leave beans alone. I agree with leaving beans alone. I've said all along, I thought the bean weather market was preliminary. Beans are certainly an August crop. Of course, you want to build a big plant, but at the same time, you know, we've had some awfully short beans yield really well in the past. So I think with the genetics, leaving beans at 52 for the time being was probably the right move.
And then Naomi, your thoughts on the corn yield drop, 4 bushels, that work for you?
Well, I was glad to see that the USDA acknowledged the situation, that it's not going to be just this humongous crop that they were anticipating. Definitely, we're going to see some yield get cut off just because of that early drought that we had with June. But a lot of the industry now is in question. So they're thinking, okay, well, at least the USDA acknowledged the situation, but what if yield ends up being 172 to 173? And I know there's some bigger analysts and companies out there that are, you know, using their methodology, and they think that yield number could be a little bit lower. Of course, it's going to take a few weeks until we can get some satellite imagery out there to give us a better feel for things. But just remember, last year, that satellite imagery, that third, fourth week of July, really picked up on the fact that the crop was smaller than what the USDA said. And the trade bit on that, and they went with it, and that put a summer low into the market. So probably for the time being, we see the market maybe trade sideways here for a little bit until we get a better handle on where the yield could come in from the satellites. Or, as Matt said, just keeping an eye on these weather forecasts in the coming days and weeks as well. But I think ultimately there still is enough question in where the yield is or isn't that it's too soon to let the corn market just totally tank and fall apart. But also, to Matt's point, we know August is when the bean crop is made. So it's too soon potentially to see the bean market take off and run higher also until we get more weather known. So maybe both of those markets trading sideways here in the short term. Again, we're in like a little bit of a doldrums in terms of markets here for the short term until we get the yield figured out.
Yield, but it's always yield times acreage. And so there was 2.1 million extra acres that are in the numbers now based off the survey, based off the numbers that farmers turned in to USDA. And that gave us a total production of 15.32 billion bushels. Given the 4 bushel to the acre cut in yield for corn, you might have thought that that would put up a smaller number for total production. It didn't. Last month, that was 15.265. This month, it's 15,320,000,000. It's a lot of corn. The drought-stricken corn from last year was 13.73. And in 2021-22, that crop size was just over 15 billion. So this one's, 226 million bushels bigger than that one if it were to come to fruition. Total crop size is really pretty large, and that meant that the ending stocks did not change very much from 2257 to 2262, so just a 5 million bushel increase. That number feel right to you, or is there something in the consumption pattern that is wrong?
Here's the thing. I think Naomi and I both would agree with this. I mean, 177.5 was a 4 bushel drop, but let's be real. That would still be an all-time record, you know? So obviously we had a very challenging June. I agree on that part. I just think USDA is typically not going to take a monstrous bite out of yield in the month of July. I think stair-stepping into some sort of a lower yield makes sense. 181.5 was definitely a plenty rich. I do think we possess the hybrids to do something like a 181.5, but I think you're going to need an ideal growing season. So whenever you start to dissect what's going on in the balance sheet, you know, dropping stocks for old crop, 50 million bushel, in my opinion, it could have dropped more. Whenever I looked at the quarterly stocks from the end of June, it told me that we should have seen the carry out stocks for old crop actually a little bit lower than what we got yesterday. But if I go into the new crop, they still have exports at a very high level at this 2.1. That's excessive in my opinion, especially given our new crop book. It's just a pathetic new crop bookings that we have so far. What's it going to take to get that going? Of course, it's going to be cheaper prices. But I do think there's a ton of moving parts, Todd. So my personal opinion is that the numbers we see for new crop, as far as your carry out, as far as your demand, all of those could move significantly moving forward. I think you could make the case for quite a bit higher carry out if you had a 177.5. But again, I think that verdict is still out. So I think moving forward without ideal weather, you're probably going to tick that yield back a little more. I mean, we're kind of floating around that 173 or 4 level right now is just kind of what we're talking about. If that were the case, you know, and you kept demand constant, obviously it would keep you closer to that 2 billion. But again, I kind of feel like without quite a bit lower prices, our demand is not going to end up being as stout as what the USDA is predicting.
Matt, in your backyard, what's the crop look like?
Awfully good. You know, 2 weeks ago, before that rain came through, actually on Thursday, exactly 2 weeks ago, you know, we weren't so sure. We'd had a couple of smaller systems come through and had a couple of rains to just kind of keep the crop going, especially on the black ground. Things looked awfully good. The lighter ground, I think there was some damage done, but overall, right now, today, as we sit, I think we've got really good yield potential in places. I think Illinois as a whole, 214 last year. You're probably going to drop somewhere between 15 bushel, maybe even a little more than that off the Illinois crop. I know some folks have floated a 185, but in my particular area, I think the good ground has got a chance to have very similar yields to what we saw just a year ago. And of course, we had pretty ideal conditions last year. I feel really good about corn. Beans took off and grew a little bit finally after we got that rain. I do think that this bean crop could be a pretty large one in our part of the world if we continue to get some rainfall. But of course, you know, we're going to know more a lot about that whenever we get, you know, farther into the month of August.
How deep into pollination are you now?
Well, all of the earlier corn is pollinated that we've looked at. So we started planting right around that 11th or 12th of April, and all of our corn, we did the test that you did, you know, got the silk ball off. Sure looks like it's all pollinated. We're in pretty good shape as far as that goes. There is some later corn, of course, but a lot of corn went in the ground here by the 20th of April, and I'd say most of it's either pollinating or already pollinated. So a lot of planes. Sounds like a war zone around here with all the planes flying around and helicopters. A lot of fungicides going on, and I think that's a testament, Todd, as to what people think their crop potential is, because if you're going to throw $40 an acre into a corn crop, given the fact that cash prices for fall, you know, even after a really good day or 470, that tells me that you really feel confident about what kind of yield that you potentially have out there in the field.
No, I haven't taken a look around here again out in the field, at least since I was in Saturday, and you mentioned the video that I posted to Twitter. That was just one field that had actually completed pollination and everything fell off. That field probably averaged 5'8", 5'9". It wasn't very tall. Your corn in that range too?
Our corn's taller than that right in here around me. You know, I think on some of the lighter ground, you've got some corn that pollinated in that 6 foot range. But I do think right in here, what I would say on the north side of the moraine, if you will, and so north of Route 16, I think you're going to see a fair amount of corn, at least right in through here. You get too far north, and some of those folks were quite a bit drier in June, but right in here, we're seeing a lot of 8 and 9 foot tall corn.
Yeah, just so those who are listening in other parts that don't understand where he is exactly, for the state of Illinois, he's about an hour south of Champaign or across the Beltline. So he's an hour south of the dead center of the state. What are you, 77? You're about 70 miles south of us, I suppose. Are you that far? Maybe not quite that far. But
Yeah. The good barometer for me is I can make it to the U of I basketball game in about an hour and 10 minutes.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm going to say 65, 70 miles.
It would take...
Tiff driving, we can make it in less than an hour.
I don't think Naomi could make it in an hour. She might make it in four. Maybe they're in West Bend, Wisconsin. Naomi, we've talked for a lot about what it looks like in the backyard for Matt. You have been across Wisconsin in, the last week? What does it look like there?
Very mixed crop. So I'm on the eastern side of the state in Fond du Lac, and that's between Milwaukee and Green Bay. The corn here got planted late, and so the corn right around where I'm at in prime dairy country is waist high to shoulder height, and I'm 5'7", so that gives you any kind of frame of reference. So then over the weekend, we went to my son's ball game in La Crosse on the western side of the state, and we took one route there and one route, a different route home, and all of the crop was very mixed and variable throughout the drive. Within the same field, it was mixed and variable. Tallest corn was still shoulder height. And we're in the center of Wisconsin, it's called the Central Sands, and there's a lot of irrigation there. It had been used to be potato country back in the day, and now they're doing more corn and beans on it. But driving through there, they had been just parched and had not gotten any rain recently. So the corn that was irrigated was actually, it looked about waist high, and it was pretty uniform. Where the corn was not irrigated, you know, definitely that pineappling, and it looked to me like it was actually just like dead, crispy, dead, and I didn't know if any rain was going to help the situation or not. So it's a mixed bag in Wisconsin, and that's been pretty consistent with what I've heard from my clients across the state. Just because we've had hit or miss rain showers until yesterday, finally it looked like about a good soaker went across the state, and a lot of people got about an inch of rain, but it has just been so sporadic up until now. So I'm very curious to see how we fare with this, but we are behind. It's not perfect. And I think we'll be the state that brings down the national average, I can tell you that.
I did make note that Thursday rain 2 weeks ago that Matt mentioned earlier on really didn't appear to hit Wisconsin. Also, there wasn't much rain in Minnesota. If you looked far enough back using a 14-day, it was almost as if it drew lines at the southern state lines for both Wisconsin and Minnesota, said, no, we're not going north of these. So has anybody talked to folks in Minnesota? Do we know how they're faring? Maybe I'll start with you, Naomi. What do we know about conditions there and in parts of Iowa as well?
Well, I would say my clients in Iowa have been having a little bit better luck with rains. At first, it was very inconsistent, but suddenly a lot more consistency happening, and no one is complaining. And when no one is complaining, I know things are okay. With Minnesota clients, they are all over the place. Just really feels similar to Wisconsin, just because the rains have been so hit or miss. I know just south of the cities, it's been on the drier side. But, you know, we'll see when all is said and done. You know, this is the time of year where if, you know, the rains can come, and if the weather is decent, you know, as the bulk of this crop is pollinating, you know, can we save the day on it, or what's going to be occurring is, you know, everyone, it's everyone's top of mind right now. So I don't know what maybe Matt's been hearing from clients that he's been working with throughout the country. Anything similar, Matt, or different?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, for instance, in Minnesota, I think it's a mixed bag. You know, I have a producer, they called me this morning and said that every 190 and south got a pretty good rain. Seemed like folks that were north of 90 maybe didn't get any rain, and they've got a drier forecast for the next few days. But overall, I've got to think Minnesota is maybe not as good as what it's been the last couple of years. I've got to think that, you know, a state like, for instance, Iowa has got the chance relative to last couple of years to be awfully good. But then you get into eastern Iowa and there's some areas that are awfully dry. So I think there's a lot of hit and miss that's out there. I guess the best way I could explain what I think has happened over the last two weeks is that we've averted a major disaster. You know, I'm not saying we would have had a 2012 happen, but we were certainly to the point where we weren't mowing yards anymore. Our pastures were brown. You know, and quite frankly, we were bordering on dire straits, and a big chunk of Illinois, parts of Indiana, and of course, eastern Iowa. I think eastern Iowa continues in places to miss the big rain. So, you know, I think that what we've done is we've stabilized ourselves to where, you know, maybe it's maybe a good over under right now is last year's yield in that low 170s. Again, I feel like 177.5 is a fair number for this report, just simply due to the fact that the USDA doesn't typically take gigantic chunks all at once. So I think right now I'm again going to be nestling in that lower 170s based upon all the producers that we talked to. I've talked to everyone from folks that feel like they're not going to have much of anything to people that feel like they could have a record crop, actually. So I think those are fewer and farther between this year than what we've seen the last 2 years, but I still think there's a few of them out there.
Naomi, turn your attention to the S&D table for soybeans now. We've talked a little bit about it, but haven't gotten to the ending stocks number. That was 300 million, which surprised the Dickens, I believe, out of almost everybody. Of course, they did not change the yield, and there were 4 million fewer acres to be dealt with, and then USDA made some other changes along the way. What did they do that managed to put 300 million bushels in the ending stocks?
So the USDA on the report, they were a little bit more aggressive in cutting new crop demand. And so they lowered the export number by about 125 million bushels, the crush number lowered by about 10 million bushels, and I think that was a little bit of a surprise to the industry. So the trade was looking for an ending stock number for new crop closer to 205 million bushels. So it was a little bit of a surprise that it went from 350 on the June report down to 300. especially with the big, you know, cuts that we had on the acres. So I think that was the USDA's way of not allowing the market to have the ability to get over $14 for the new crop price for the moment. So we have to now wait for that August weather, and we're going to wait to see if we see any signs of life in terms of exports and export demand. But, you know, this morning we had 315,000 tons of soybeans sold to Mexico. So there's some new crop demand there starting to pick up. And we saw, of course, Chinese imports for the month of June being up substantially, I think about 25% higher than the year ago. Of course, we know that Brazil is getting a lot of that business right now, but it also is saying that China is buying and that their demand is still strong overall. Of course, we hope to see that come over to the U.S. market, and with maybe the dollar dropping here, if that can continue, it might make us a little bit more competitive. So traders are hopeful for that. But in the short term with those beans, support right now for the November beans is 1325. Resistance is at 14. We might be stuck in this range for just a little bit until we can see where demand is, if we're seeing that export market pick up, or waiting again for that August weather forecast.
Remind us again why the value of the dollar is important to the export market.
It has to do with currency exchange rates. So when the value of our dollar is lower, it makes it cheaper for other countries to import our products, again, based on the currency exchange rate. So we like to see, on the agricultural side of life, we like to see when the U.S. dollar is down. And the reason the dollar is down because we had some decent CPI news this week. Maybe inflation is kind of getting under control. There's hope that the feds won't raise interest rates. So all of that was the reason that the dollar was lower today. We'll see what comes to fruition as the Fed meets and their next go-around. But I think that was a large portion of why the grain market was higher today, was because that dollar was down.
Another thing that was on your list, Naomi, was the Black Sea grain deal. Is that about corn, wheat, soybeans, other oil seeds?
Well, it's about all of it. It is all about all of the moving parts there. So with the Black Sea region, the deal is supposed to expire like Sunday to Monday. Trade is assuming that the two-month extension is going to happen because it always happens. But now there's maybe some signs that Russia is getting a little bit annoyed with the situation. I mean, earlier this week, they did some aggressive bombing at the port of Odessa, where they actually took out or hurt some of the grain infrastructure there for export. So I'm thinking, well, that's kind of not a great sign that they're wanting to extend this deal if they are really antagonizing that region of Odessa. So that's something to be mindful of. I think also with NATO meeting, and now they have Finland and Sweden as part of NATO, so that really sets a definitive border between NATO countries and Russia. I think Russia's like getting a little bit more of the mindset of, okay, you know, we've got the world kind of really against what Putin has been going on. All eyes are on him. So he either needs to quickly cooperate or he's going to say, no way, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to help you out. I'm not going to make this green deal happen. So from a geopolitical standpoint, it's really fascinating to watch this unfold. And again, trade is assuming that this deal is going to happen. Everything is going to be fine. So if the deal does not get done, we will have higher markets next week because it is not priced into the market. If the deal happens, it is priced into the market. So it would be a non-event. So that's another thing to be watching over the weekend and into Monday.
If it does not get done and there are higher prices next week, how long will it take, and I don't know whether you have a very good idea or not, for this to be priced into the market? And is that an opportunity, and I'll ask you, Matt, the same thing, for producers to price old and or new crop commodities?
I would say if it doesn't happen next week and the market responds with a flash in the pan higher price value, that would be an opportunity for catch-up sales because I think the world would be wanting to get Putin to cooperate quickly, and it would probably be seen as a short-term thing. The other thing is that Ukraine behind the scenes has really been trying to work on being able to export their product more via rail and other ways to get it out of the country versus relying on the ports. So they are doing their best to expand things in that regard. Other countries are working with Ukraine to see if they can get that to happen. It's just forced that to occur. So, yeah, we'll see. But I would say if the Green Deal doesn't happen and the market goes up, that'll be an opportunity for cash sales in the short term, would be my take on it.
Yeah, I definitely would feel in that camp that, you know, if we don't get the deal to go, you should get a pop higher again. Obviously, there's a lot of folks in and around the trade that feel like a decent yield is in store, you know, as far as corn's concerned. Beans, we don't know enough about it yet. But one thing that I would say is that if beans continue with the strength that we've seen, even where they're at today, I guess one thing that we haven't talked about that I'd like to point out is that, you know, this world supply of beans is set to grow substantially from year on year to around 101 and change to around 120 and change. And so with that being the case, yes, we're very tight domestically. But at the same time, on a world standpoint, we're not necessarily tight by any means. And if you're going to go up anywhere in the range of 20% on stocks, you've got to ask yourself if world soybean originators are going to be out there chasing $14 beans around. So, you know, I think if you get a rally in here, I'd take advantage of it. It gives you a chance to manage some risk. I'd still keep the flexibility. We've got to stay flexible in these markets. You know, just yesterday, everyone was down in the dumps because beans closed down 32.5. And then today you come in here and they're up 40. So it's just one of those deals where flexibility is a necessity, at least until you quantify what kind of production you're going to see on your farm. And you're able to feel confident that you're flexible enough that if the market takes off on a bender higher due to something out of our control, for instance, Black Sea region export agreement, then I've got to think that that'd be the best place for you to be putting your marketing plan.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. Matt Bennett, I'll let you start. Anything that you want to make sure that producers are thinking about at this point?
Yeah, I just think that you've had a nice little run here after a tough day after the report. Regardless of what happens the next 6 weeks, weather is going to be telling the tale as to what's going on here. A person has to be very mindful of how their marketing plan is impacted by today's prices. And I would want to do something other than sit on my hands anytime I see markets up 16 cents and up 42 cents. So with that being said, again, I can't preach flexibility enough. This market is one that can twist and turn in a violent fashion very quickly. And I certainly don't want to get too many eggs in one basket.
And Naomi Bloom, your final word?
Similar to what Matt is saying, if we can see a recovery bounce, especially with corn being down nearly $1.50 in the course of 3 weeks, we haven't had any kind of recovery bounce yet. A lot of traders, I think, made some cash sales when the market had that rally recently, but some of them were a little bit cautious because they were still dealing with dryness and they were very concerned how much they were going to be growing. I think that there were some puts that were definitely purchased, but, you know, people really wanting to capitalize on more cash sales, especially now that they might be feeling a little bit more confident with their crop. So use that to your advantage. As Matt said, though, maintain the flexibility. We still are dealing with a lot of geopolitical mess. We have a situation where if all of a sudden it does become hot and dry in August, and if the bean price works higher, well, guess what? Corn's going to probably go along with it. So, again, be ready to think and look out both sides of the scenario right now, why prices could drift lower, why prices could go higher. So that way you're just ready for anything. Because when the market did have that rally, a lot of people were just like deer in the headlights and didn't know what to do, and it was there and it was gone, and there was a lot of regret. So just start to be scenario planning in your head so that way you can take advantage of whatever comes up in the next couple weeks.
Now let's turn our attention to one more analyst for the day. Mike Zuzlow is here. He's at GlobalCommerceSearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Mike, thank you so much for catching up with me. I knew we weren't quite capable of getting you into the middle of the mix. I do want to ask you a bit about the USDA reports this week. What was your assessment there of them, and is there something that we really need to pay attention to?
I think mostly, Todd, other than the decrease in the total demand for U.S. soybeans of 135 million bushels, it was a mostly neutral report. Yes, the yield went up in the wheat for the United States, but I think that is more than offset by the significant decline in the world wheat numbers. Not only did production go down in the world wheat, the demand went up. And so we essentially lost about 7 million tons net of supplies. And that took our stocks to use ratios down 0.6% to 33 1/3 percentage, which that's a big change month to month. The only other thing I would probably say about the USDA report is that we've got unfinished business, I think, in terms of the soybean yield, maybe the corn yield, and I think even maybe the wheat yield, because I was a little surprised USDA. We knew that the soft red wheat yields were coming off the charts in some areas like Indiana. I've probably talked to a half a dozen clients that have had a 100 to 112 average, and they're done at this point. And so I'm not surprised that the yield would have gone up some, but with Kansas not even breaching much over 50% and usually being at 90% done as of this past week in harvest, I was surprised USDA went ahead and raised their yield. So I think they may have to come back around and address that, especially because the spring wheat crop is still a significant issue. So maybe the weather is not as much a 2012 situation, but I think there's still some unfinished business when it comes to yield and the weather side of the equation.
So that'll come up in coming months. Of course, USDA has its first USDA NAS crop production report rather than the WASD figures, but they'll be incorporated into them in the month of August, so we'll see more then. I'm also wondering about the soybean side of this ledger. You suggested that maybe those numbers needed to be changed. They're 52 at the moment. You think soybeans have been hurt already?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the agriculture and drought update that came out on Thursday after the report, we still had 64% of the corn in drought and 57% in beans. In the beans, that was down 3 points, but we're still almost double where we were last year at 32%. I do think that 52 bushel yield is probably unattainable at this point on a pretty still sizable acreage base. And so I think we could slip closer to the 50, 51 bushel level. My carryover level is at 256 because I picked up on the lower demand and the fact that we do, for a change, Todd, we do have a big Brazilian crop. And I think that's maybe the one thing the trade's missing as we go through the weather market is we haven't had to deal with this big of a Brazilian competition in crop size. We've talked about it a lot over the last 5 years, but Brazil's really never finished it and gotten it over the goal line. And this year it looks like they have. So we're going to have plenty of competition with a very weak China economy. And we saw that in their export-import data. So I think if anything, we're out of whack when it came to the price action in the versus the report. It was the beans continued to rally. And I have to put that at the feet of the funds and put that at the feet of the weather side again.
So wait, you're of a mind that beans did not need to rally simply because there's just enough supply on the planet? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it's really interesting. That's exactly what I'm saying, because in 2008, the soybeans went down to about, in November, about 1168. In 2013, they went down to about 1160. I think looking at the world numbers, I think that 1140, 1160 level is a gravitational pull at this point. So we get over the weather scare. We see what the next 2 weeks of weather looks like. We take a look at the global weather in China and India, and we can take a look at the world numbers after the next WASD report comes out. But as it stands right now, I think beans have a substantial premium. Fat cattle, feeder cattle, and soybeans are the top three things that I think are the right thing to hedge now, especially in those deferred contracts.
Okay, so how does the U.S. dollar, and we talked a little bit about this with Naomi, related to the strength of the dollar or it coming below 100 and maybe not as strong as it was and giving some boost to U.S. exports might play into things. But you're thinking longer term with the dollar as well. What are your thought processes this week on the economies.
I find it very strange that the trade has gone ahead and collapsed the dollar. I mean, we're on a track to go 4% lower on a monthly basis in just the last 2 weeks of trade. That's right up there with some of the biggest drops that we've seen ever since 2016, Todd, and maybe even going all the way back to 2006. Why are they doing that? Is it because the CPI and PPI data are suggesting that the Fed doesn't need to raise rates? Well, that's what the bond markets are suggesting. And if that's the case, why are they pushing the dollar down so hard right before the Federal Reserve gets ready for their next policy meeting on the 26th? I almost feel like the cat's away, the mice can play, because the Fed's not going to talk for a couple of weeks. But are they walking in front of a train that's coming down the track? And I really think this price action in the soybeans, the report, and the way the dollar's acting is we're still supply weather led in this market. And I think it's still a market to hedge, especially if we can get a really good strong rally this last couple weeks of July right before that Federal Reserve report. I'll get some hedges freshened up if we can get that kind of a scenario build up.
Mike Suslow is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. He joined us on our Commodity Week program recorded July the 13th, along with Naomi Bloom of TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin, and AgMarket.net's Matt Bennett from Windsor, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.